Good evening, everybody. It's fantastic to see that so many people are interested in housing, but maybe that's also easy when the speaker promises pleasure and luxury for all. It's a real immense pleasure to have Jean-Philippe Vassal tonight here as part of the Wohnungsfrage project and as an extension of the ongoing Wohnungsfrage Academy. Which has brought together really fantastic experts from different fields discussing the issue of housing. And I think from the international scene, there are probably very few architects who are more interesting than Jean-Philippe, who has contributed a lot to that topic. He has graduated from the École d'Architecture in Bordeaux in 1980, then worked as an architect in Nigeria for a couple of years before opening the office Lacaton Vassal in 1987. Since then, they developed a very prolific position in the field of architecture, something that hasn't been seen in that way before. They have created, developed projects in the field of culture and education, such as projects, for instance, the Palais de Tokyo in Paris or the School of Architecture in Nantes. But even more so, their position is related to the topic of housing, which is at the center of this project here at Haus der Kultur in der Welt. I remember having visited projects like the one in Mulhouse in France, which was it Cité Manifeste, the name? Yeah, right. More recently, the renovation and somehow new interpretation of towers in the periphery of Paris. I think all those projects in the field of housing have questioned existing parameters, existing laws and rules, and also somehow the relation between architects, users, and the clients, which is somehow also the starting point for our exhibition here in Berlin. It seems to us, as curators of this project, seemed very important to somehow also redefine the role of the architect, of clients, and of users, and to create a sort of new dynamic which could also produce new configurations, new questions for the field of housing. I think that's probably enough. I'll keep it short as an introduction because I think we are all really keen to hear from Jean-Philippe more about his position regarding the question of housing, the Wohnungsfrage, referring to Friedrich Engels. Thank you. Please give a warm welcome to Jean-Philippe Vassal.
Thanks a lot. I am really happy to be here in Berlin. And thanks for your invitation in Haus der Kulturen und die Welt. And I think that in the word house, it's already a house. Everything is a house. The city, the buildings, the libraries, the schools, the universities, and the house are houses. Everywhere it's house, it's about inhabiting and the city. And in Berlin, because I think that things can happen from here, because the city has a special character, has a special history. It is probably the place where we have the biggest number of new architecture, modern architecture, has to offer in Europa. And the landscape and the territory is so particular that I think that things can happen from here. Change can happen from here. It's about inhabiting pleasure and luxury for all. Because luxury is not expensive. Luxury is cheap. can be cheap. It's, we just have to redefine this question of what is luxury. What is luxury today in a democracy for architecture and for architects? It's luxury for all. It means, I think, freedom, space, maximum, possibility of choice, easiness, comfort, pleasure, nice relationships. This could be luxury. It means to create space with as little material as possible, to create space with as little money as possible. It means to do the maximum with the minimum, with nothing, with nearly nothing, simply, delicately, lightly, poetically, with economy, doing the luxury. No more all these things about the minimum, about the constraints, the rules and the regulations, the norms, the standards, the insulation. So we can think in a different way. I think we need to go back to very simple facts, very simple things. A landscape, a situation, and just few branches fixed in the sand. Then just bend them in a curve above your head. And then start to envelop them with straw in order to have ventilation or to have protection from rain. A straw hut, a fence around, some branches in the sand supporting a roof for living, looking at the landscape, a villa with nearly nothing. In the 50s, Farnsworth House, Miss, less is more. 50s still, case study program was a social housing program. Pierre Koenig, Villa Obermann in the 60s. A landscape, a location, a ground, some few steel posts, 10 centimeters large, supporting a roof made of corrugated aluminum or steel, and then an envelope of sliding windows all around. That's all. Nearly nothing. Could be extremely cheap today, social, but luxurious. A villa. Maison Domino, 1914. What it is, just providing ground, floors, creating space for air, for life, for light, for movement, for freedom, with this possibility to be less or more related with outside by filtering, by opening, or by closing. And inside these floors, just the air, the light, the sun, the rays of the sun. Climate inside in function and in relations with climate outside. This possibility to live with the climate, with the days and the nights, with the seasons, with the movement, with the air, with the fresh air. To live with its environment, a sort of natural consumption of energy with good sense. It's nearly nothing. Just this is enough to build fantastic houses and villa. The problem it is that I have the feeling that nearly nothing happens from 50 years now, except some very interesting and brilliant experiments that have never been followed, that have never been pushed further, like close to here in Tiergarten, Eco House by Fraiotto in IBA 87. In Tiergarten, no trees have been cut. And today, the trees are acting like natural screens for the ray of the sun in summer, or to leave the sun coming through the branches in winter. No trees was cut. Then, just construction of some platforms, spaced 7 meters each to the other, supported by a high-capacity structure, a huge staircase from the ground to the first and the second platform. Just offering space for houses and gardens, freedom for every person to realize there its own house, personally or with the help of some other architects. Inside Berlin, a luxury situation. On the first platform, view from above, without destroying the place as it was before. Density, ecology, economy of land, of streets, of technical networks. It's a luxurious situation inside Berlin. And even in another place, at another dimension, a larger dimension, already done another project. Inhabiting beyond the functional conveys pleasure, generosity, the freedom to occupy a space. A space for living must be generous, comfortable, adaptable, flexible, luxurious, and affordable. Dwellings must offer freedoms of usage to generate possibilities for evolution, for interpretation and appropriation. In general, the standards of housing are too small, too restricting. The principle of standard minimum for the living space is wrong. It means offer as much extra space as programmed space, to promote new relationships within spaces, to bring about pleasurable situations. This extra space is a non-defined space, free for use, added to the traditional spaces. Spaces defined not necessarily by functions, but by qualities. Every dwelling must have a private outside space, as a balcony, a terrace, a winter garden, to give the possibility of living outside, of having a garden like a single house. It is necessary to create living spaces much more generous, as large as possible, to multiply the space for uses and appropriation. The same facilities as a villa. So it means additional public spaces, winter gardens, terraces, balconies, unprogrammed spaces, perhaps 50% minimum of the habitable surface in addition. Possibilities for the inhabitant to move around. instead of the standard. Extend the mobility, the fluidity, the freedom of use. All rooms can have large doors opening to outside, facility of moving by inside or by outside, as a house on the same level. Flexibility of the constructive system, beam columns in order to support floors, very simply, open structure, large spans, free facades, only few columns for capacity of evolution, of transformation, economical construction. The building can be much larger for the same cost. The cost of 130 square meters could be the same as the one of 65. About climate, energy saving, uses, instead of external, fixed and definitive insulation, create intermediate temperate spaces like buffer zone with passive energy saving and extra space for new users to live in this new kind of insulation, which is never the same in function of the days or the night or in function of the seasons. It means building larger, twice more, building double, with the same cost as the standard dwelling to be affordable for everyone. To create other possibilities, other freedoms, new ways of inhabiting, to fully inhabit, to loosen norms, decompress space and to allow this freedom of users, to transform and enlarge what exists instead of demolishing it, to offer twice more space to each person, necessary and essential condition to any project who wants to increase the density. More space, more air. The same facilities as a villa. Everywhere. The idea of luxury is therefore redefined in terms of generosity, freedom of use, and pleasure. In Mulhouse, in Cité Manifeste, it was in 2005, 14 dwellings for social housing. So the question here was to build double. The question was, if we build two times bigger, the rent should be two times bigger or more. Why? Is it possible to fix the rent in function of the cost of the building? It seems logic. It seems natural. Yes, it is. And it has been like that. The client says, OK, it's just an habit, these relations between the area and the square meters. But finally, a relation between the rent and the effective cost could be really done. And in this case, it's clear that energy consumption, that also has to be the same as a standard housing. Space for many occupation. So instead of 70 or 80 square meters standard flat, possibility to have 180 square meters of living space. Another project, still in Mulhouse, with the same client, nearly 10 years later. Same idea, same concept. Building larger. More dense, in a more dense part of the city of Mulhouse. More density, but still more space for each. Density is always that, thinking of densification means to create more space for each. Deep plants, winter gardens, duplex. The flat that it is 130 square meters instead of 70, plus nearly 60 extra space as winter gardens or balconies. in the same cost as the standard. With this free space for different users. Gardens, canapé, sofa, armchairs, parasol, simplex or duplex. Just giving this possibility of space, connection with relations with the air, with the sky, with the landscape. Our aim is to redevelop in the cities this concept of villa everywhere, even in the more dense situation, houses with garden. The economy is not only that of the construction of a building, it is also and especially that of the city, the use of all the opportunities and capacities of the existing city by its transformation. And all those connected economies then become a vector of freedom for housing. Instead of demolitions, alternative to transformation, like in Paris, the Tour Bois Le Prêtre, transforming a housing block with 96 rented dwellings of social housing, but keeping the population inside, just changing the facades and the windows, taking away the asbestos and the pollution on the facade, creating new energy, new entrance, new elevators, and changing finally the image of the tower from that situation to push it, to open it to this situation. With a budget that it is half of what should be would have been spent by demolition and reconstruction of the same number of flats, but with the possibility to have flats that are much larger than the standards today. Views that never existed before, connections and balconies that never existed before, and that are making of this tower now one of the most exciting situation of tower in this area of Paris. Just changing from inside to outside, taking all the richness that we never see that exists inside and give it more connections to the outside. Or in Saint-Nazaire, densification in Saint-Nazaire. There was 40 existing flats. And then creating new bathrooms with natural light, new bedrooms, new extensions with 60 to 80% of additional surfaces. And then densification with 40 new flats. Just connected to the existing, creating three entrance halls, new elevators, and a new situation. So, just working on this very precise and delicate transformation of the existing, taking all the capacities and opportunities of the existing. 80 flats where there was before 40 flats, and 80 flats much bigger than before. But still with this question of economy. No new streets to do that, no new technical ducts or network, just at the closer of the existing building, densification by creating more additional surfaces with this possibility of new shops, new equipments, new schools just around. The city is full of contradiction and strange situations. With the students at UDK, we try to question these strange places, like here, nearly in the center of Berlin, in Lichtenberg, strange places on the two sides of the same street, in the center of the city. On one side, a free field, empty, with a project of approximately 100 little houses with gardens around. When on the other side, just on the other side of the street, there was already 50,000 square meters of unused capacity, empty, abandoned for 10 years, with plenty of beautiful trees. And then it's interesting to think about this situation, to see how it's possible to create an alternative, and to say, perhaps, on this existing situation, it is possible to create 600 new flats from the existing, with the existing, and to push them to a fantastic and luxurious situation with the park already there and with the trees already there. So densification doesn't mean to fill the voids or to fill the empty spaces. Densification, luxurious situations, large situations of living, they can be done even with the maximum of delicacy and precaution, considering the landscape and the characters of the city of Berlin. Keeping the voids, keeping the free space, just thinking of this precise and delicate transformation. We should have a new glance to the city, not to look at it from far away, just as buildings at the horizon, and thinking, oh, they are big blocks, they are not so beautiful, the life should be difficult there. So we have to look at them more closer and closer, to go deep inside the buildings. In Bordeaux, it is now about the transformation of 550 flats in this part of the city, going closer and closer. With the cost by apartment of 40,000 euro by flat, it is possible to make two or three times more than demolition or reconstruction of this building. It is possible to go much further than the standard project. Then repairing, adding new elevators, changing all the bathroom, changing the electricity, changing the paint inside the flats, new cellars and new entrance and new halls, and this additional area on the facade, which is nearly 4 meters deep, it is possible to change the situation from the existing by adding for all the flats, all the heights, 15 levels high. Each building is 150 meters long. And from the existing to place some extension module units, then new posts and new columns, then opening the old facade and creating new windows and new sliding windows, placing new systems to close and create winter gardens, and then the final extensions. So from that situation, to carry these elements 7 or 8 by day, very quickly, to fix them to the facade, to fix the new columns and the new systems, level by level, with the people inside, from that situation, with a very small balcony, opening the window, taking away the asbest, which was there, and opening to the existing flat, placing new windows and new transparency, and opening to a new living space with new facilities, new light, and energy savings. 4 meters large, and it creates a new situation. New elevators, new entrance halls, and you can go from the kitchen, go to the winter garden, come back inside the living room, go back and enter by the bedroom. So it's a new movement, a new freedom that it is possible. Immediately, just 2 weeks, 3 weeks after, immediately the plants are coming there, the new sofa, the new canapé, the new chairs, the new life is changing. It is incredible to see how it can be rich inside. We should never imagine that from outside, but you can see incredible situations of luxury with furniture, with decoration on the walls, with lamps. And it is just to take care of this situation, to be extremely careful, and just to go further, to give more light, to give more space, and to give more freedom. And immediately, it's possible to see this old lady with new plants, new chairs, new situation, new animals, occupying the space. I think this is about luxury. And this system that full of plants, birds, elements, objects, that creates a filter from the deep inside to the outside. For me, it's about luxury, and we should really work on this question. Because to create affordable housing is not only the question of architects. It is about the question of the economy of the city. It is to break the rigid and poor frame imposed by the real estate market and the regulations that are adapted to it. With less flats, with smallest rooms, with the minimum, with constraint and scarcity, the real estate is happy. It allows, like in Paris, to rent rooms of 6 square meters for 500 euro by month, situations of poorness and scarcity. It's also about to break this ecology and sustainability business. Not a false ecology, but a right one and good sense. Not a false economy, but come back to real costs of every component. And luxury, luxury for all. And this will be the benefit for the city. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jean-Philippe, for this very inspiring talk after many days of very intense debates around the housing question. I think we probably needed that injection of your spirit hinting to ideas of luxury and like increasing space rather than bemoaning a situation where we always talk about the lack of space, which seems to be pretty dominant in the current debate about housing. And because what we hear from both users and politicians is basically lack of apartments. Also, we hear about the problems of the costs and regulations, etc. It seems as if, just to start discussion, it seems as if economy plays a major role in your approach, and economy also in relation to what you claim for luxury.
Yeah, I think the economy is a tool, and architects know how to deal with these questions. But the problem it is that we are in a frame that is totally rigid and fixed and defined by the real estate and by the speculation on lands. But if we take really, we come back really to the question of the effective cost of everything, every post, every beam, every floor, every window, every bathroom, every bath tube, every shower, and if we make the addition, we can see that we can still create luxury. And it is important to create this luxury because it's what we learn from the modern movement. It's not necessary to compare the aesthetic of the facade of the 18th century and the facade of the 20th century. What is interesting it is to see the character of each of them, with some preferring some and others they prefer some others. But the modernist architecture has some qualities. It's about easiness, about space, about light, about freedom. So we should make these things existing freely and not to be constrained in this rigid frame that is imposed by only the real estate system. So by building more flats, by using the existing situations, by creating flats much bigger, we can break this system. We can push to this question of pleasure of living simply and with the minimum budget as possible. This is possible. Architects, I am sure they can do that. It is only, we are always talking about affordable, and it seems always that it is the fault of the architect if it is not affordable. No. It is a fault of the system and of the rigid frame in which we are obliged to work.
So the systemic problem is, if I stand you right, are regulations partly? Do we need new legal frames, or can we somehow use the current system but in a more intelligent way? So the background of my question is, are the changes that we needed, are they dramatic also in a systemic way, social, political, economic, or is this a kind of prolongation of a modernist project that we know from the welfare state?
If the regulations were never changed, we would still live in caverns. So I think who is making the regulations and the rule change? Architects, by precisely pushing them and seeing that good sense and efficiency, looking for the objectives and not for the tools, looking for inventive situations and not for standards, then it gives the possibility to be even better than the regulation and in terms of objectives, but with invention and not only with standards. And then the regulations will change. We start by making winter gardens, and we see that 2, 3, or 5 years later, winter gardens were taken account in the regulation. And we start to work with these thick curtains to create insulation, and we see that now these curtains are taken in account in the regulation. So who is making changing the regulation? Architects, by their inventivity.
I'd like to open up the discussion to the audience. I'm sure there are many questions. I think there's the first one over here.
Okay. Hello. Thank you for the presentation. And I wanted to ask you, is this within the framework of ANRU, the National Agency of Urban Reconstruction? And if it is, can you tell us more about the process? When does the architect enter it and how it goes? Thank you.
In these systems of renovation in France, that was decided 10 years ago, The demolition was the key system. And in 10 years, 15 billiards of euro have been spent to demolish 100,000 flats and to rebuild 100,000 flats. So at the end, it is zero flats more. And 15 billiards of euro to do that. When in France, you have a lot of people asking for flats because there is a lack of flats in France. But the architects and the Ministry of Culture, in which the architects depend, was totally not questioned about that. It was a bureaucratic decision from the Minister of the city of the city that decided this. So we try to resist, but I show you three projects where it is possible to do that. Sometimes some clients are interested, but it is a little drop of water in a big amount of demolition everywhere. But the economy is totally far away from that. So with all this money that has been spent, we could make really luxury situation, create really luxury situations.
Okay. Thank you very much for a very empowering and very optimistic vision. And I'm sorry to be the one to take this a notch down. I would like to ask you to talk a little bit about class and race and the politics of these in the discussion of these projects. I think your work is so powerful in part because it shows us, or it kind of strokes over or goes over these difficult stigmatized environments in some cases. And I'm curious what your opinion is as to what the role of this architecture is in changing this image, in changing the kind of dynamics of class and race in these environments.
I think what is important, because I always very often refer to the modern architecture, because it's now. it is this question of being inside, of the feeling of space from inside and to outside. And as if the smallest fragment of space could be each flat. And this very delicate attention, this very delicate vision and about each of these space, for each inhabitant, for each family, but just multiplied 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times, and 1 million times. And we think and we believe that this creates a city. It means that when you have this luxury inside, when you have this comfort, when you have this freedom, the relationships outside are different. The way you're talking with your neighbor is not the same if you are in a very constraining and hard situation in your flat, or if you are in a better situation if you can and then discuss and have relations with him. And for us, all these attentions to each of these space creates the aesthetic of the city. The aesthetic of the city is defined by its inhabitants, by the life of the inhabitants. If the inhabitants are happy, the city is beautiful. If the balconies are plenty of flowers, if you see what happens, if you see the movement, the city becomes beautiful. The city is beautiful of the kindness of the relationships between its inhabitants. The public space works also like that. And each time you inside your private space, it is this possibility of invitation, having from friends, having some flowers, looking outside, taking the sun, taking the fresh air, with very simple things. And for me, in addition to the historical city, this makes the quality of the city and the beauty of the city.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. My question is, you said, at a certain moment you mentioned that your goal is to transform the dwellings as villas, right? Like we could live in villas on the sky, in the sky and all that. So, and expanding these dwellings with this extra space, giving that luxury, the quality that you mentioned, in some of the pictures actually it sounds as if people are actually having some kind of anxiety to fill in that space, you know, packing it with a lot of stuff, you know, stuffing the space. I wonder, I mean, if you have this extraordinary talent to manage to build 130 square meters for the price of 65 square meters, whether you could also use it for two of two things I'm going to mention. One is keeping the 65 square meters, but increasing the number of dwellings to the double, which could be actually quite useful in circumstances where we cannot afford the luxury of duplicating the size of a dwelling, like in India, for instance, right? The other thing, for instance, instead of investing and expanding the realm of the family, of the individual, whether you could also, let's say, use your skills, let's say, in terms of making these buildings affordable, to expand, let's say, the realm of the collective or social spaces, to put it like that.
I think we do a lot, or sometimes we avoid to work on the intimate space and the private space because we say we want to work first on the public space and the collective space. And it is a sort of, we have done the grounds just to the blocks. That's enough. What is behind the wall, we don't want to. We think that it is a straight line that takes all the spaces from the most intimate one to the most public one, that it is coherent, that has to have each time this quality. I think we have to work in double sense, in terms of number of flats and in terms of quality of flats. We have never been able to work with developers. Even if you go and see a developer and say him, you can build more cheaper or bigger, he doesn't want, because he just wants to keep the standard. Because keeping the standard is the way is most efficient for him. So it's sometimes possible with social housing clients, but it is very difficult to push the developers in this situation. We think that it is important to work on the two directions. Quality, why the architect today should start or should continue to make poor spaces, small windows, when it is possible to make large windows, large spaces in the same budget as a smaller one. Also, there is an economy, which is in fact means that everything is not at the same cost. You have some cost for the windows, or you have some cost for the technical equipments in a space. But if your living room is two times bigger, it's just floor and concrete and it doesn't make the difference. So the cost by square meters is not efficient in the way of defining the real cost of a space and of a flat or of a building. A flat that could be done by Zaha Hadid has not the same cost as a flat that could be done by another architect. So we are still working on this question of cost by square meter, and it is not a very good thing.
I think it's very interesting that you just say that you don't have private clients. And I have a question. Architecture is extremely regulated for so many reasons, and you think it's a good thing. Do you think we should start, or the state should start, working on regulating the speculation for a private developer to stop speculating without any limits on the sale of housing dwellings?
When we see this example in Lichtenberg with this building that is abandoned for 10 years because precisely somebody buys it and does nothing, do you think it's normal for the city? We shouldn't. There should be some interventions on that, I think. the prices are going higher, and in the same time, you have so many square meters that are abandoned, left, where it should be just necessary to make a minimum to transform them in very nice places. So I think what is interesting for me, it is about what is the benefit for the city. It is not for necessary inhabitants, but the city as a collectivity of inhabitants. To make a city beautiful and nice and comfortable and luxurious. And I think the city is able to do that without selling the ground to these developers that don't make so much benefit for the inhabitants and for the city. I think we should work on all these complex situations, delicate, because you have an existing building or you have a particular situation. We have to work on the worst situations, the situations where the ground is polluted, in order to repair it. When finally we see that when we give some lands for the developers, most of the time it is the most beautiful on the border of the park or just close to the Spree or the river. What is interesting, it is to work on the most difficult situation, and it is precisely there in the most difficult situation that the miracle is possible. You can change the worse in the better. And this is what I think is interesting for architects, because it needs inventivity, it needs invention, it needs reflection. When all the developers just want tabula rasa with a flat land to make exactly the same standard as they have done in other cities or just close to this place. No, we need to work with complex situations. It is precisely the way the architects have to save themselves, to save their profession.
Question.
Yes. Thank you very much for sharing your great work. You said the principle of standard minimum is wrong. I was wondering, have you ever, through your design practice, already influenced the institutional version of building regulations? And also, if you thought that there are design standards that are not based on quantity, and that still can be internationalized?
Yes, probably you have some standards that are interesting and that you could work with. What is interesting, it is to understand the objectives of each regulation or each rule, and to go further. When people say about we need to save energy, it seems natural. All of us, we want to save energy, and perhaps even more than the regulation asks. When the regulation asks to make careful situations for handicapped people, everyone, as an architect, would want to do this easiness for handicapped and also for all. So. But sometimes it is not exactly the same tool that you have to use. Objective is always the one that is interesting. The tool that is very often obligatory is the problem. But I think as architects, as urban planners, we are the people that can change the regulation, make the regulations moving and changing and improving. And I was talking about that. We see that some winter gardens or systems of insulation that we proposed, they were totally out of the regulation 10 years ago, and now they are inside the regulation. But the change is different in France, different in Spain, different in Germany. But in every situation, we need to have this relation with the context. It is incredible to see that today around Madrid they have developed exactly the same standard as the one that is developed around Amsterdam or Arnhem in Holland. when finally, when you look at the building of the 70s in Barcelona or in Madrid, you can see totally different characteristics and features of the housing, much more dealing with the sun, with the winter, with the balconies, with the protection, with the shading of the system. So I think this adaptation, precise adaptation to each situation, a situation with a tree is different with a situation with no tree. Transforming some existing buildings, it is different in function of if it is Madame Antel or Mr. Another family there. Each time you try to see, this lady, she wanted to be very careful with his object and mirrors, and this one, she wants something that you can discuss. This precise discussion is very interesting with the people. It is about richness of the way of working.
We have just a few more questions with Anna.
Thank you very much for your lecture, and I highly appreciate your approach, especially the way you challenge the developers' logic of functioning and also even the building industry. And I really could see what you propose for Lichtenberg as being a very, very good solution for Berlin that I would like much more than having individual houses. But if I look at France, and if I look at the context in which the grand ensembles are used, I mean, they are in a very high ethnic diversity. And when I was living half a year in a very difficult grand ensemble site in the suburbs of Paris, and I really noticed that the first reaction of inhabitants would be to close the curtains, and they really had no interest of looking outside, but really, I mean, to be intimate and to have a distance from their neighbors, which they experienced as being difficult. I mean, in a case we had Chinese and North African communities who did not necessarily be on good terms with each other. So I wonder who is the subject, and do you reflect on the status of the user who need to have the skill to use these spaces?
I think what is important is to create easy situations and possibility of choice. Actually, I think that if a flat is larger, it is more possible, you have more possibilities in a larger flat than in a smaller one, even to create some partitions inside or more partitions inside. When a flat is transparent with this buffer zone and these temperate areas, it also offers more possibilities of closing, filtering, opening the situation. So I think what is important in architecture is what is able to create the maximum of possibilities for the freedom of each. In this situation, so we have a lot of African families, they invent new situations of living, but this extra space for them is benefit. It's different, but it creates a sort of distance filter with objects, with that keep a most intimate part in the existing building, and it is this relation that I think is interesting to try to see how we can give more possibility of choice because of the diversity of the families of the population that is living there.
Maybe a last question here.
Thank you very much for your presentation. It was very refreshing to see a different perspective on this issue, because in the United States, where I'm from, the real discussion right now is about micro units, you know, how to shrink everything, how to minimize everything. And one of the interesting outcomes in terms of cost is that micro units are actually not very economical, because you're shrinking kind of the empty space, but maintaining all the expensive, you know, kitchens, bathrooms, mechanicals. And so here it seems you're taking the opposite approach and kind of expanding that flexible space, so you're actually not increasing the cost. And so my question was actually something that you have already answered in the previous question about households and diversity of households, so I'll ask you something else about why you think the social housing agencies are being more experimental in this way, and what was the critical turning point that led them to embrace this vision of incremental change rather than demolition and redevelopment. Was it the numbers? Was it something about the efficiency and the time scale? Was it particular municipalities or agencies that were more experimental and willing to try new things? Because it seems like it's not that all, not all social housing developers would go this approach, right? So, thank you.
The situations are really complex. About the suburbs in France, it's not only the question and the problem of architects. Very often it is social question that you have to solve. What is sure for me it is that the demolition is not also the right answer. We see precisely that there is a more precise and more delicate and more precision is very important in order to understand, not alone as an architect, not alone as an urban planner, but with sociologists, with people living there, working there. And to have this attention and this precision is, for me, absolutely necessary. So I think this to work on the city nearly like a doctor, but delicately, precisely, with attention to everybody, and I think that the way to create to the urban planning and to make the transformation of the city from the existing city, no more from the tabula rasa, starts by working on the very precise situations that are problematic and to see how each one can be solved, another one can be solved, and all of them, if they are solved, it makes the city much better. And this is totally linked with the idea of economy. It is a precise attention that is, by nature, that is totally economic. And we have plenty of A's from the architect to be able to listen and to observe very carefully all these precise situations, all these problems of the city that can be changed. Sometimes to see the richness where nobody looks at it or sees that it is already existing. And I think these points are extremely important. We have to just to be careful about the systems of compressing, reducing. What are the reasons? In fact, the city is large enough. Everywhere it's large enough to invent new situations. In Paris or in Berlin, I think that today the flow ratio is 3 or 4 or perhaps 5 in some situations. In beautiful places in Buenos Aires, in Argentina, you can see a flow ratio of 15, and the flats are 200 or 300 square meters, so you have more density and more space for everybody. And the flats and the buildings are simply made, economically made. So this is possible. And I think that precisely the real estate market is working on this idea of scarcity, of lack of flats. And it is because there is not enough flats, because the flats are small, that this idea of luxury comes in their point to establish a luxury from the poorest situation. When I think precisely we have to work on a luxury for all situations and for everyone.
Thank you so much, Jean-Philippe, for that plaidoyer for another architecture. I think it was very timely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All these examples from the US where they demolished the Grand Ensemble and they started again with new urbanism because this is the alternative then. In black communities, etc.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is.
But it is. Yeah.
It's interesting that you really. Because there are very few architects who really make claim for more intelligence into questioning somehow the norms and the...